From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection for this hour was made last Thursday, 2 days after so-called Super Tuesday, when 14 states and territories voted. Senator Elizabeth Warren ended her presidential campaign after failing to win a single state. She followed two other women out of the race, Senators Kamala Harris and Amy Klobuchar. If you think about the Democratic race as being split among moderates and progressives, you would probably have Harris and Klobuchar near the center, Warren on the progressive side. Combined, voters in not one American state decided that the women were the best of the candidates. Pete Buttigieg claimed a narrow win in Iowa. Michael Bloomberg even won American Samoa. Bernie Sanders and Joe Biden have won the rest. It is a total rejection of the women in the Democratic race in 2020. And this hour, it's an examination of why. Bear with me. Here's a lengthy look at some of the reaction to the exit of Warren from the campaign last week. Writing for The Week, here's Zoe Fenson under the headline, "It's 2020 and Women Are Exhausted." Quote, "Regardless of precisely what Sanders said to Warren in 2018, he isn't wrong about the role of misogyny in this election. And that, for me, is the most painful part of all of this. The knowledge that, with all the privilege that women like me now have, we are fighting an uphill battle that we very well may not win." End quote. Here's Jessica Valenti, a feminist author who wrote the following after Super Tuesday, quote, "Even just supporting Warren has come with an unbearable amount of misogynist condescension. I'm tired of being told that I'm a single-issue voter because I care about a candidate's gender, even if it's not the only thing I care about. I'm over being made to feel as if representation for half the population isn't a necessary and radical political position. I don't appreciate being told that I'm either anti-revolution because I didn't support Sanders, or unrealistic because I won't vote for Biden. I especially resent the theory being bandied about that Warren somehow stole votes from Sanders. That's nonsense," end quote. Here's author and journalist Sarah Smarsh, who lives in Kansas and published a book about the new American left in middle America. It's called Heartland. For the New York Times, she wrote the following under the headline, "I am burning with fury and grief over Elizabeth Warren, and I am not alone." Quote, "This is the best chance that a woman has ever had to become the president," said my dad, a white, 60-something construction worker who has identified as a Democratic Socialist since Bernie Sanders' 2016 candidacy. "Now," he said, "it's now." But my grandmother disagreed. She's 79 years old, and she said, 10 years from now, we'll be ready for a woman. My grandma might not get to see our first woman president. Ms. Warren might not either. I'm 39. Will I? I feel certain of it. Yet many women have died after a lifetime of such certainty." End quote. But then there was a pushback to the idea that sexism cost Klobuchar, Harris, or Warren. Many writers just argued that the women have got to be better candidates. They weren't good enough this time around. Here's left-leaning writer Katie Herzog, who writes for alternative newspaper The Stranger in Seattle. She writes, quote, "Warren could have focused on the working class. Instead, she focused on the wokest class, and there aren't enough Oberlin grads for her to win Ohio," end quote. Here's Deborah So writing for the Globe and Mail under the headline, "Blaming sexism for Elizabeth Warren's loss is a disservice to women." Quote, "There were myriad other culprits that could have contributed to her downfall, among them declaring that she was of Native American ancestry, announcing plans to appoint a transgender 9-year-old to approve the Secretary of Education, and telling the Culinary Workers Union in Las Vegas to call a woman when you have a mess that needs cleaning up. This enthusiastic embracing of the wokest of identity politics was not the only thing that led to her campaign's demise. A widely seen video of a father in Iowa disagreeing with Ms. Warren's proposition to cancel student loan debt spoke to her difficulty in connecting with voters," end quote. So what do you think? Our guests this hour are digesting the rejection of another leading woman in politics, Elizabeth Warren, who led the polls in the fall and left the race with zero victories. Our guests this hour include Jen Lunsford, an attorney with Seeger and Sciortino, and a current candidate for the 135th Assembly District. Welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Happy to be here.
Tiana Magnon is here. Our former colleague here is a political analyst and media specialist. Can we say more about you?
No, I think that's pretty good, right? That's good.
Great to have you.
Your intro was long enough. We'll
I know. Well, there's a lot being said about this. Thank you for being here. On the line with us is Laurel Elder, professor of political science, co-chair of the Department of Sociology, and coordinator of legal studies at Hartwick College. Welcome, Laurel. Thanks for taking the time.
Thank you so much for having me.
I want to start with the words of Elizabeth Warren herself when she was asked whether she does think sexism played a role. And I think we've got that sound ready to go. This is just last Thursday, talking to reporters for the first time since dropping out of the race.
Gender in this race, you know, that is the trap question for every woman. If you say, yeah, there was sexism in this race, everyone says, whiner. And if you say, no, there was no sexism, about a bazillion women think, what planet do you live on? I promise you this, I will have a lot more to say on that subject later on.
So Senator Elizabeth Warren last week, Jen Lunsford, sexism, misogyny, yes or no?
Just listening to her say that's such a bummer. It's exhausting. It makes me like physically heavy because I am a lawyer. I deal with this all the time. I'm very frequently the only woman in a courtroom. I'm the only woman in a meeting. And unless the culprit is only sexism, exclusively sexism, like someone said, don't worry your pretty little head, little girl, you can't handle this because of your period, people don't believe that sexism is the issue. If there is any other plausible culprit, you are not allowed to point sexism out. And it is a trap because you are a whiner, you are a victim. It's all about identity politics. If we ever point out that maybe someone could possibly have an opinion, that is at all shaped by the fact that someone is a woman.
Tiana Magnon.
No, I think that's spot on. I think unless it's overt, people really don't want to talk about it. And I think as soon as you start to limit that conversation, of course, it only plays into the hands of people who benefit from this. I mean, you shut down the conversation. Now there's really no solutions coming forward. We can't even agree on, you know, whether sexism really happened in this campaign. So we can't move on to kind of root it out in our politics. So I think that's kind of it benefits people who are already in power.
Professor Elder, what do you think?
I come at this maybe from a little bit of a different perspective, which is as a social scientist. So what can we look at in terms of empirical evidence? And so there's been a lot of studies that have looked at to what extent women and men are judged differently in political office. And, you know, to what extent do they have trouble or are they similar in terms of how the public evaluates them or in terms of how often they win elections or raise money? And one of the interesting things is there's a lot of studies out there that show that there aren't significant gender differences in terms of candidates for political office, in terms of when women run, they win as often as men. When women run, they get the similar percentage of the vote. They raise as much money as men in similar races. The real catch here, though, well, there's two catches. One is that all these studies have been done on state legislative or congressional races because that's where the data is. We just don't have enough cases of women running for president to have enough data to really do analyses on. The other thing is just because we find women raise as much money as men and women gather as many votes as men, it doesn't mean that the playing field is gender neutral, as your other two guests were saying. And there's a lot of evidence that campaign terrain is very much gendered. And our expectations for power, and especially presidential power, are very much gendered in American society. Our expectations for what we want for a president are very masculine. And that, I mean, I can say more about this, but it creates challenges for any woman who is running for the position of president.
So, listeners, if you want to join the conversation about what you've seen and your thoughts on the exit of not only Senator Elizabeth Warren, but previously Amy Klobuchar, Kamala Harris, it's 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. You can email the program, connections@wxxi.org. Last night, Joe Biden won Michigan after Bernie Sanders beat Hillary Clinton narrowly 4 years ago. And the big difference was white men swung from voting for Bernie Sanders 4 years ago against Hillary Clinton to voting for Joe Biden today. So, Professor Elder, does that tell us anything interesting about one state? Is it a different year, different moment? What do you make of that?
Right. Once again, yeah, as a social scientist, we just don't have a lot of cases. It's hard to say how much of the resistance to Hillary Clinton was a product of Hillary Clinton and the fact that she'd been in the public spotlight for a couple of decades and had with her certain baggage. There were certain, you know, scandals and there was other issues. So, you know, she was a well-known quantity and a lot of people reacted negatively to her, even though a lot of people also loved her. So there's that. And so it's just hard to say whether how much it's gender when we have so few cases to compare it to. And sure, you're right, it is very much a different moment with Democrats.
Okay.
Really just wanting to defeat Donald Trump.
Tiana Magnon, I've had a number of listeners share with me some data indicating that at least on Super Tuesday, college-educated men voted for Warren more than college-educated women. And they shared this with me to say, look, if this was really about sexism, Warren wouldn't have done better with college-educated men than women. Jen Lunsford, something just happened. There was.
You know what? Maybe we should shift that way first, though.
I'm physically gesticulating.
Come through, Jen.
Okay, what's happening?
Women are sexist too. That's always the thing I think people don't understand is that women are sexist too, and Democrats are sexist too, and it's so ingrained in us that we don't even see it. And I'll tell you, anecdotally, on the trail, I get it more from women than men. I have far more women say things to me like, who's going to watch your kid while you're in Albany? Mm. Far more women say, how could you leave your baby? Let me tell you, that one. that one's hard. But it's this idea that, and I think going back to what you're saying, if you look at the reaction to Hillary in 2016 and how many people said, I'll vote for a woman, but not her. You know who I'd vote for? Elizabeth Warren. And then here we are, and it's like, but you said Elizabeth Warren, and there she is. And if you look at the approval ratings of a Hillary Clinton when she was in office versus a Hillary Clinton when she was running for office, what you'll see is that her approval ratings were much higher when she was in office rather than when she was seeking candidacy. And the same is true of Elizabeth Warren. There's something about the seeking of power that makes people treat a woman differently.
Tiana, you want to follow that? Go ahead.
Well, now I actually forget the original question.
Sorry.
But I guess I'm not totally surprised. I should be, but I think there are so many factors that go into why, especially in college where you're already dealing with schedules and you're dealing with different things. Maybe you're working two jobs. I can't speak to why more college guys would vote for her, but I do hope that is a shift in generational ideas. Maybe the next generation of men are more excited to see a female president, not compared to women, but maybe than older men.
Not just college age, college educated.
College educated,
yeah.
Yes.
So more men with college degrees voting for Elizabeth Warren than women with college
yes.
degrees.
Wow.
Okay.
Let's just hope that, hey, maybe they're, you know,
well, on that
just
subject,
take that support.
Charles in Penfield wants to expand on that. Go ahead, Charles.
Hi. My only comment is, of all the institutions out there where there's sexism, and there's certainly many, many, many of them, this is the one institution where on paper there's a level playing field. Women make up 50%+ of the population, so why aren't women voting for women to become candidates? It's frustrating because they have the power to do it. I grant there's sexism everywhere, but all they have to do is vote to overcome this problem, yet they're not.
Okay, Charles, you want to add to that then, Jen Lunsford, because you had a lot to say just a moment ago.
Well, it's because women are sexist too, but also defeating sexism is not only a woman's job. Defeating sexism is an everyone job. And women aren't enough to take it upon themselves because not every single person is registered to vote. Not every single person is going to vote. And this idea that women should rise up as a block to vote for women, also simply because she's a woman, is insufficient because there is still a woman in this race and she is not my pick. But, you know, I'm not voting for every woman just because they're a woman.
Well, right. I mean, I doubt you'd be voting for Nikki Haley.
That's correct. Though, let me say it today, she will be our first female president.
I was going
to
say, I think our first female president will be conservative, Republican, or at least very,
yep.
very centrist.
You think it's going to be Nikki Haley, specifically?
I do. Mark it. Put it on paper.
Wow. That's a
March 11th, guys.
All right. So before I shift in different directions, just on the Tulsi Gabbard point, Ken emailed the program to say, I've got good news for those listening who are disappointed that a woman is no longer running. You're wrong. If you truly believe that gender should be the only determining factor in the race, you can cast your vote for Tulsi Gabbard, despite the fact that Dems are hell-bent on not nominating her. Otherwise, stop complaining and simply admit you just want someone in the White House who's going to do things you want them to do, and the woman angle is just so you can get votes from the woke crowd.
I'll be under the table. You guys deal with the rest of this. This is such a bummer.
Ken says stop complaining or vote for Tulsi Gabbard. But that that ignores something here. Let me ask all three of you on this. The email from Ken implies that the only reason you wanted, you might have wanted Elizabeth Warren was because she's a woman. And so, Jen, two things. You want to dispel that? Go ahead, and I'll go around the table. I'll start with Jen on this. And then, for those who've asked, and I got an email saying, are you saying that if a woman's not the nominee, that it's inherently a sexist party? Hit that, too.
All right, so no. It's not sexist if you didn't vote for Elizabeth Warren. But
it's not de facto sexist.
It's not de facto sexist. And there may be many reasons of which sexism is a small part. And you may not be a person influenced by sexism yourself, but you are existing within a society and within a media landscape that is influenced by sexism. When we had Elizabeth Warren come out third in New Hampshire, the story was, look at fourth place Biden. There were charts on MSNBC where Elizabeth Warren's face was Amy Klobuchar. You know, there is this media erasure of Elizabeth Warren as a viable candidate, and that influences people too. And I think that, you know, Elizabeth Warren was the perfect middle ground between Bernie and Biden. She was as progressive as Bernie on most things without the socialist label. She was younger, you know, at 70, still younger. She had all of the senatorial experience and gravitas of a Biden without Joe Biden's mouth and some of the like baggage that comes with him. And this idea where people would say, you know, I like Bernie, but, and I like Biden, but, and Elizabeth Warren wasn't their choice. I think you have to look at that and decide, was that issue not tinged with sexism?
Okay, Tiana Mignon, is it de facto sexism if the Democrats didn't nominate a woman?
No, and I think to Ken's point, I think that's what voting is. You're putting someone in office who represents what you want. That's what you should be voting for. But I would also say, I think this points to a bigger issue in political reporting, where we don't do a good job covering candidates unless we think they're mainstream. And so when you were talking about Warren and, you know, all of these graphics, something similar happened to Yang and, you know, so many different candidates who had these really great ideas. I think the worst thing that we can do to a candidate who loses isn't just to talk about their loss, but to still talk about the platforms that they champion and whether we can bring them forward.
Professor Elder, is it de facto sexism if the Democrats don't nominate a woman?
No, I don't think it is. And, you know, I think some of these questions like, oh, if women don't vote for women, then, you know, that's a problem, or that shows that they don't, you know, support women, or, you know, to not vote for the woman is sexist. And I think that sort of misses the role that gender and sexism and misogyny actually play in our politics. I was mentioning before, I mean, the caller had said something like, this is a gender-neutral opportunity, this is the perfect opportunity for a woman. It's really not, because the presidency is so masculinized. And by that, what I mean is, when you ask Americans, what are you looking for in a president? They will say things like strong, assertive, leader, commander-in-chief. And they use terms that historically have been associated more with men than women. Now, of course, a woman can be assertive. She could be commander-in-chief. But the problem is, there's a catch-22. There's all these studies in psychology and other social sciences showing when women take on those characteristics of being assertive, of being strong, proving they're tough and a commander-in-chief, it makes them less likable. Hillary Clinton ran into this. And so a candidate like Elizabeth Warren knows this full well, and they have to navigate this gendered terrain in a very particular way.
So, Professor, let me ask you then. There's a clip of Joe Biden talking to a Michigan voter Tuesday morning where he tells the voter, you're full of blank. And that clip goes viral. And most of the conclusion I saw were people saying, well, this is going to help Joe Biden. Would that kind of clip help a Hillary Clinton or an Elizabeth Warren?
There's research that suggests, and there's been all these interesting studies, that people respond to men and women saying the exact same things or having the same credentials, behaving in the same way, differently. So there's strong reason to suggest that it would people would react differently if it was a woman saying that. That, you know, when a woman asks for a raise versus a man asking for a raise, using the exact same body language, words, everything, people think, oh, isn't that great that man is being assertive and asking for what he deserves? And that woman, unlikable, you know, I just don't like something about her, people reacting more negatively to it. So that very much exists in our society, that people react differently to the same exact behavior for women and men. And it's particularly when it's, you know, masculinized, you know, types of behavior. So that is a real challenge. So my point is that it's a lot more complicated than just like, oh, if you don't vote for the woman, you're sexist, or women should vote for women. And that's really not how our politics plays out. Gender is not a top priority in how people vote. I mean, partisanship is a huge factor in how people vote, way bigger than gender.
844-295-TALK. It's toll free. I want to read some of Irene's comments on Twitter and ask our guests about that. So, Tiana, I'm thinking about Katie Herzog's comments that I see reflected in so many places. Deborah So's column in the Globe and Mail said that, no, the real problem with Elizabeth Warren is she went too woke. Katie Herzog says she could have focused on the working class, but instead she focused on the wokest class. I admit, I don't get that. Elizabeth Warren's entire body of work has been about protecting vulnerable workers, going after banks, clip after clip. Now, yes, in the campaign, she talked about issues that are related to social justice. She talked about some of her goals and her feelings about that. But I don't feel that that automatically supplants the other stuff. And that what that to me says is, even on the political left, there's not a real comfort with having accessible conversations about that. Whereas Irene says the following: what I've been wanting to say is, I don't care that Elizabeth Warren is a woman. The fact that she actively, earnestly engaged black women, specifically including disabled folks, to shape her policies is what made her impressive. She planned on centering her governing on the most oppressed groups in the country, which is how you cut to the core of our broken systems and create prosperity for all. She did the research, the reading, and had all the receipts. I fully respect and honor Native people's disdain for her opportunistic co-opting of Cherokee heritage. I wonder if she's willing to do more to provide restitution for the damage and pain she caused in that. That's from Irene. But she's saying, generally speaking, what she saw from Warren was someone who was not only seeking to fix problems or have a plan for that, but have a plan for that that was inclusive. But that seems to have cost her with some of these left-leaning writers who say, well, if you went woke and you lost people. What do you make of that?
I think that also depends that you are in the circles of the people who are talking about this. If you're not already in those bubbles of people who are talking about disability and, you know, race and gender and all of these bigger issues, chances are you're going to miss out on, number one, why that matters to her plans for those people, but three, how it not only benefits them, but the entire nation as a whole. And so I think that's the challenge when you are chasing, not chasing woke voters, but when you are, when you have a woke campaign, you have to do the work of not only finding the right kind of policy, you have to educate your voters as opposed to your policy being informed by the bigger voter bloc. So I think that's kind of the challenge. A lot of her campaign was spent both informing, but then also trying to get votes and then also listening. And so she was pulled in so many directions. I think that made it kind of tough.
Jen Lunsford, what do you make of that?
Well, I think that if you look at tangibles, Elizabeth Warren has done substantially more real-life work for the working class than Bernie Sanders has. I mean, in terms of the consumer protections that she herself was instrumental in the Obama administration, plus her work as a senator, and the idea that she is in some way abandoning the working class by being, quote, woke, which I think is code for acknowledging that people exist. And anytime someone talks about wokeness or identity politics, I'm like, well, if you're a person of color or a woman or a person with disabilities, that you don't consider it woke that someone's talking about the fact that you exist in society too. And I'd also like to see side by sides of how much she talked about those issues versus Bernie, because I think Bernie also touches on those, but he doesn't get the same flack that she does.
Well, I guess I don't get the idea that she only focused on the wokest class and not the working class. Mm-hmm. I don't think that that is supported by any of the evidence. To me, what it suggests is there, for some people, if you talk about quote-unquote woke issues at all, they cast you out. That's just not comfortable. Professor Elder, oh no, go ahead, Tiana. Yeah,
I was just going to say, who also gets to be part of the working class? Mm-hmm. And I think that's
because there's
a
code for, because working class is code for white working class a lot, right?
Yep.
And you know, I guess 4 years ago, Trump won the working class if you exclude people of color. He lost the working class.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But so how many times have we heard the media say he won the working class?
Exactly. Just redefining. I mean, there are so many working people of color, women, disabled, all of those kind of people who are left out of that definition.
So I think what I'm hearing from you, and please grade me on where I am on this, mm-hmm. but there's a frustration that if we say Trump won the working class, when what we really mean is he won the white working class, it erases people of color, people who aren't white working class.
Yeah.
And when Elizabeth Warren wants to include everyone, if we say, well, that's too woke, that betrays that there is a real discomfort mm-hmm. with accessing it. Though I will say, I would think that the Katie Herzogs of the world would say, no, we don't have a problem with that. Katie Herzog happens to be a lesbian and has written about all kinds of issues related to sexuality over the years. I think she would say, Jen, that she views it as pandering to win support from a woke crowd. No?
That's so unfair. I feel like politicians get a lot of, they don't get the benefit of the doubt when they have opinions about things. Even like music, like we act like they're not people who might have opinions about things they really like. Anytime they say something, we assume there's...
Well, Tom Steyer. Anyway,
we assume there's some kind of calculus behind it. Like, you don't really like Green Day. That just polled well in some focus group. You know, it's not fair to say that she's pandering by listening to people whose issues she hopes to champion.
Professor Elder, what do you make of the debate about wokest class versus working class?
I would hesitate to say, oh, there was one particular thing she did wrong in her campaign and that's why it didn't go better. There's some political scientists try to predict presidential nomination outcomes since we moved to a system where the voters rather than the parties pick the nominees. They've created these sort of models and what sort of shapes who ends up winning, Republican, Democratic nominee. And the models suggest that it is the candidate leading in name recognition in national polls well before, months and months before the Iowa caucus even takes place. And they also look at who leads the fundraising and who leads in terms of endorsement. And this is like months before a voter has ever cast a ballot. And those prediction models end up being accurate most of the time. And in this case, Joe Biden was leading in the national polls. Bernie Sanders was leading in fundraising. And Joe Biden was leading in endorsements well before. And so, there's something to that suggests it is not that surprising that Elizabeth Warren and all the other 20-plus candidates who are running didn't end up winning. What would have been really shocking is if one of those other candidates, besides Bernie Sanders and Joe Biden, ended up in the top. It has happened before, but it's been very unusual. Usually the person with the, structural advantages going in ends up on top. So I think that's probably the primary factor of why we're where we are today. But, I mean, I do think gender plays a role in all of these things.
And, Professor, keeping the sociological focus, I was seeing some response to the voting yesterday and people saying, wow, Joe Biden is actually the one who's driven turnout. He's got people excited. Best I can tell from actual real on the ground work with voters in a lot of different states, what's motivating is defeating Trump more and usually don't win just by voting out somebody. You want to vote for something. But when you talk to black voters in South Carolina who really turned this race, they may, issue by issue, agree more with a progressive idea, but they don't trust white voters to vote progressively in November. They have a bad history trusting white voters, and they want to beat Trump. They view him as a national emergency, so they went with what they think is safe. When you talk to voters in the Democratic Party in other states, they will say, we've got to win, but generally got to win right now means woman is too risky, Professor. I mean, women are still viewed as risky, it seems.
Yeah, I mean, I think the whole concept of electability is very much a gendered and a racial concept. I mean, it means, yes, we want someone who can win as president, and almost all of our presidents have been white men. So I think it is very much bringing those things into it, but using this word that sounds neutral, which is electability. I mean, and like I said, why were Bernie Sanders and Joe Biden leading in the national polls? I mean, there's a lot of history. You know, Joe Biden was the vice president. He was selected to be that. I mean, overwhelmingly, the people who are probably in the consideration to be vice presidential candidates most years, maybe it will be different this year, are men because they still dominate our high-level political offices, governorships, senators, where vice presidents are often chosen from. So there's, you know, there's layers to this.
So let's take our only break of the hour, and as I do that, let me answer Roger's question. He says, Evan, what on earth is this WOKUS class, or whatever the word is you've been using? Well, he spells it W-O-K-U-S. I apologize, Roger. I'm quoting Katie Herzog from The Stranger in Seattle, who said that Warren didn't focus on the working class. She focused on the wokest class, W-O-K-E-S-T, as in most woke, as in Katie Herzog's view, too focused on identity, not focused on working people. That's her construction of it. You've heard our guests take apart that construction of it. But that is some of what people point to when they look at the demise of the Warren campaign. Roger, thank you for that. We'll get more of your emails. Connections at WXXI.org, 844-295-TALK. If you want to call the program, 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. We're talking about the demise of the leading female women candidates. I know that term is also something that upsets people. There's male candidates and female candidates. They're women. And Jen Lunsford's here, an attorney with Seeger Sorrentino and a current candidate for the 135th Assembly. Tiana Magnon is a political analyst and a media specialist, and Laurel Elder is on the line with us, a professor of political science and co-chair of the Department of Sociology and coordinator of legal studies at Hartwick College. We're right back to some of your feedback next. Connections, I'm Evan Dawson. Tim writes to say, Evan, I wanted Andrew Yang because of his message on technology and climate, and Warren was my second choice for her work on consumer protection. My 70-year-old mother, however, did not want Warren because of Warren's statement that she would get rid of private health care. Unfortunately, we still vote on fear. Trump is framed as an existential threat to humanity, and we choose once again on who could beat him, not who will bring forward a better society. That is from Tim. Mark wants to know if our guests think we will see a woman in the White House, and quote, not just as vice president, which seems to be the consolation prize. That's interesting. Professor Elder, are we going to see a woman president anytime in the next 50 years?
Well, that is a good question. I don't know for sure. I mean, one of the things that's interesting to keep in mind is I think the people on your panel today are very interested in seeing a woman president. I mean, I happen to think that our democracy would be stronger and more legitimate if women were represented proportionally, not just a woman president, vice president, but half of our members of Congress, state legislators, judges. But the interesting thing is, and it's a little discouraging to me, it's just not a priority for most people in American society. I think back to the 2016 election where you had, you know, that was also a big disappointment to feminists and people who wanted to see women, you know, the first woman president, because not only did Hillary Clinton, the first woman major party candidate in a general election, lose, but she lost to someone who was on the record as making sexist comments, had many accusations of sexual assault. And it's interesting, exit polls showed that 70% of Americans who went out to vote said they didn't like the way that Donald Trump talked about women. And of those, 29% went on to vote for him. And I just bring that up as an example that there's a lot of people who are like, yeah, I think it would be good to have more women in office. Yeah, I think I'd like to see a woman president. But it is not a priority for most Americans. And so I think that complicates, you know, our plans to see this happen. In other countries, they do things like they enact gender quotas, they pass laws to ensure that there's going to be more women in office, and we just haven't done anything like that in the United States, and there really hasn't been that emphasis. And even this year, I think once again, there's people who maybe liked Elizabeth Warren, but were like, electing a woman is not my first priority this year. Defeating Donald Trump is my first priority.
Tiana, do you think we're going to see a woman president in your lifetime?
Oh, we better. I really hope so. I think, again, it's probably going to be someone who's a little bit more to the right or the center of the spectrum. And I think that's just because, I mean, gender isn't something that people vote purely on. And so when you look at how many women alone went for Trump, I think that's just a huge part of who we're chasing. And so to get those votes, you have to recognize that a lot of women aren't going to vote for a super progressive candidate just because she's a woman. It's more likely that they're going to vote for someone who also actually represents their ideology. So I think once we get a candidate like that, that appeals to more of a mainstream base of women, then we'll see something like that.
Okay, Jen?
I think, we do need to acknowledge the fact that a woman was popularly elected in this country for president. Oof. Donald Trump lost by the amount of people you can fit in a football stadium in a particular part of a particular state. He won working class people in Wisconsin, and more people didn't vote at all than voted for Donald Trump. So there is an appetite where people will vote for a woman. And, Hillary Clinton was, of course, a far more centrist candidate, but so is Amy Klobuchar. Mm-hmm. And you certainly did not get the Klobuchar that Evan was looking for.
I didn't. I wasn't looking for a person. I just kept predicting it because I'm always wrong. I honestly thought...
You wanted to coin Klobuchar, which is the issue.
I did. I honestly thought, though, when you look at what sort of wins right now, my political analyst hat on, which is why I am not a political analyst, is that she is a Midwesterner who has won by big margins, has that sort of centrist kind of maybe acceptable to independent sort of a record. She's a couple decades younger than Joe Biden, who would be the oldest ever. I thought, and this is a woman who can fit what some voters who might not vote for a woman are looking for. I was wrong.
What I think is always
badly
interesting
wrong.
Is when we talk about representation and saying that, it's important that we have women in office and people of color in office and people of different sexual orientations. No one ever questions it when we say we need more business owners in government. We need more union members in government because we recognize that people from those backgrounds bring a certain perspective. But when that perspective starts to be things like gender and things that are not necessarily mainstream, that's when we go, oh, that's identity politics. But, when you talk about women's issues are things like poverty and health care and housing. Those issues disproportionately affect women. They disproportionately affect women of color, women in lower income brackets. But we were never allowed to talk about them in those terms. And I think that that has a tinge of sexism.
So to that point, let me get Carl in Geneva, who I think is making a similar point to what Jen Lunsford was just saying about the popular vote. Go ahead, Carl.
Evan, thank you for taking my call. I want to just mention, too, that I wish your subjects were more than 1 hour long because they always seem to be great subjects.
Thank you.
I think I want you to remember that, Hillary Clinton won the popular vote, at the last election. So I don't know if really gender makes any difference, but I think what we need to do is redo the electoral votes and get rid of that. The majority of the people voted for her. The same thing has happened to Al Gore, And I'm a registered Republican, okay? So it's not like I'm sticking up for the Democrats, but I'm trying to stick up for who the people want in America. We don't really need the electoral votes anymore. That system, So
yeah, I hear you, Carl.
The country did vote for a woman and really wanted her in there. It's just the way the system's broke. It needs to be fixed.
Carl,
changed.
Yeah, thank you, Carl. 3 million votes. Carl's right. And so, Professor Elder, we also got a call from a woman named Emma who wants to remind the professor that a woman did win the popular vote. She's lost the Electoral College. So we've got a number of people pointing this out. You want to respond, Professor?
No, I think that's exactly right. I mean, the reality, though, is, you know, we have rules for how we conduct our elections. Those have really come to play a big role in terms of presidential nominations. You know, the parties lay out their rules before the contests begin, but and then the Electoral College are rules for our presidential elections that are laid out in the Constitution. And people sort of think, oh, rules, oh, so that's neutral. No rules are neutral. All rules have consequences, and they benefit some people, some parties. So, yeah, the Electoral College, you know, it's a, you know, particularly by overrepresenting the votes of rural states, it has consequences. So they're right. Hillary Clinton did win more votes, without a doubt. So, but in our Electoral College system. And, of course, once again, changing that, I mean, that's a whole nother topic of conversation. But it's a really difficult to pass a constitutional amendment requiring, of course, 38 states, three-fourths of the states to vote, as well as two-thirds of both houses of Congress. Mm-hmm. And that is a really uphill battle in our very polarized climate.
That's probably not changing anytime soon. I do agree. I do see NPR reporting just this hour that House Majority Whip Jim Clyburn was a big ally of Joe Biden in South Carolina. He told NPR today he wants Joe Biden to choose an African-American woman as his running mate if Biden becomes the Democratic nominee. We'll go back around the table and ask our guests. Tiana, should that be a goal for this process?
Oof, it's like a reverse Biden, right? Where he was chosen to make Obama more palatable.
A reverse Biden.
They're just getting someone else to kind of like make up for the audiences they know they're not hitting. Oof. I mean, I like it, but if... I just hate that language, I guess.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Whereas if you said, I think he needs Stacey Abrams, yeah, which is a specific person who has a lot of actual measurable characteristics and experiences that bolster his ticket. Like, I know a lot of people think Elizabeth Warren should obviously be his running mate. Should she really balance out a Biden ticket? You know, is that another Northeast Democrat who's of similar age? She's also white, you know. She disagrees with him on a fair amount. Is that the right kind of person to broaden his base? I don't know that it is, whereas I think a Stacey Abrams lends a lot of credence.
It's almost like being used as a prop.
Go find your black woman and yeah, stick her on the ticket, guys, and that's how we're going to get our way to the White House.
Professor, you
use a little lipstick is what that
yeah,
is.
Yeah, right. It's the way it's being used, as in, like, insert any woman or insert any black woman here, and there we go. Now we're ready. So I do think descriptive representation matters. I do think one of the strengths of the Democratic Party going forward is that if you look at the elected officials in the Democratic Party, they're much more reflective of the diversity of the United States. The Republican Party, I've done some work on this, is more white and more male today than it was in decades past. There's fewer women Republicans in Congress today than there were, and in many state legislatures as well. There's only 13 women now in the House of Republican women in the House of Representatives. So the party is increasingly white male, and I think eventually, you know, this becomes a problem in terms of their electoral viability. I mean, I think there's an issue with legitimacy when you have a party that is such a mismatch with what America looks like. So I do think Democrats should celebrate the diversity of their party and the diversity of the country. But yeah, the way of talking about it, like, oh, we have to fill these two boxes, we have to check these two boxes, it just almost seems sexist to me, the way that that's being framed at times. But I am a supporter of descriptive representation. I do think it matters for the reasons that Jen mentioned, because women and men and people of different races have different experiences in America, and they bring those different experiences with them when they become legislators or presidents or sitting in cabinet meetings.
Well, here's Dan, a Bernie Sanders supporter, and says, why has Liz not endorsed Bernie? This seems like a really knowledgeable panel, and I'd like to hear why they think she has not endorsed the actual pro-woman, issues-based candidate that remains. I don't understand it. He says Biden is the obvious sexist compared to Bernie Sanders. Jen? Again, if there's no cameras in here yet, people goodness, should see what's happening
yeah,
to you. You okay?
I have a lot of facial expressions that are happening right now. The single most troubling and most upsetting thing I have heard since Elizabeth Warren has left the race is this idea that she owes it to anyone, to Bernie, to Biden, to her voters, to the cause, to endorse somebody. She is not female Bernie Sanders. She is not an avatar. She is a person who has her own segment of voters who support her, not just as a placeholder, but supported her. And she may very well align more with Bernie on a lot of values and a lot of policies, but I think she aligns more with Biden on a lot of tactics. She is a more pragmatic candidate than Bernie. It is not automatic that she would endorse Bernie over Biden. I'm not sure she should endorse anybody. But her voters also don't necessarily go where her endorsement goes. I think this late in the game, there's a lot of people whose second choice was set. And her endorsing one candidate over the other isn't going to change where those voters go. If certain kinds of people think that she acted as a spoiler to any candidate, they need to look harder at their candidate and what their candidate may have done or said to allow their voters to go somewhere else. Because here's the thing. They were never your voters to begin with. No one owns votes.
Let me get back to the phones. Robert in Fairport. Go ahead, Robert.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I think that there are a couple things with her. I think that she, number one, she got third in her home state. I mean, those voters would seem to be the ones that would know her better than anybody else. So, you know, I think there was some issues there. She really didn't appeal to black voters either. If you look at the Nevada vote, she got 12% of the black vote. Tom Steyer got 17%. Sanders 28, Biden 34, supposedly. I just think that...
How much of the black vote do you think Elizabeth Warren would have had if she had Tom Steyer's money?
I don't think it would have been appreciably that much higher.
That's not how it works, but go ahead.
I just think that she kind of comes across more as a Harvard Law professor than she does as a politician, and she kind of has smartest person in the room syndrome. It just feels like she's talking down to you a lot.
Okay, Robert, thanks for the phone call. I say that's not how it works because money definitely impacts the vote percentage. Look at Bloomberg. Tom Steyer is someone who most Americans had never heard of, and if you can get 17% of the black vote in Nevada, that is not saying black voters are, you know, facile or whatever. I mean, that has not. It's voters in general. They respond to money. They respond to advertising. They respond to presence. So anyway, Tiana, you reacted pretty viscerally to some of that. Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm always pretty critical of that criticism when women feel like they're the smartest in the room, because it typically comes from men who kind of feel intimidated rather than the woman being intimidating. And I also have an issue with the black vote. And I think if you're listening to this, if there's one thing you learned from Connections today, please stop using the black vote, because it's so different. Older black voters vote differently from younger black voters, women voters, and all of these different things. So even just kind of looking at it as monolithic, I mean, it was split up between so many different candidates. When you try and chase the black vote, you'll probably end up not getting any voters as a result. But I would just say that kind of criticism misses the mark entirely. We need to talk more about her campaign than that.
Okay. Professor Elder, when he says she turned people off by talking down to people, what do you think?
Well, it's like I said before. I mean, I think it's not that surprising that Elizabeth Warren didn't win the nomination, given where the poll and name recognition were going in. That said, one of the few people who was able to sort of defy the models and win was, of course, Barack Obama. He beat Hillary Clinton, who was the front runner by all those metrics, because he was such an amazing, gifted politician. He was also a constitutional law professor, often criticized for being too professorial. And so, I mean, this is, once again, we will never know. We won't have the data. It's a hypothetical. But, you know, people say Obama was able to do it because he was such a gifted politician. It's almost as if the regular rules didn't apply. I think you could make the argument that Warren was also an equally gifted politician. But once again, because of these gendered expectations and how people react to women doing things versus men doing the same thing, that somehow she didn't get all the glory of being this gifted politician. When she did things, it wasn't taken the same. Once again, it's a hypothetical. We won't know, but it's something that I've been like turning over in my mind. In many ways, I do think she was a truly, I mean, and is, but her presidential run, her campaign, I thought was pretty amazing. Okay. Similar to Barack Obama.
Jen, 40 seconds. You reacted viscerally to the idea of her talking down to people.
Whenever a woman is smart, it has to be approached so carefully. She can't appear smarter than the person she's speaking to, or she will be talking down to them, or she will be intimidating them. Anytime a woman is pretty, she can't be too pretty because then she's distracting, but she can't be ugly because then people won't take her seriously. She should be, there is a great article, I think it was in the New Yorker, saying that the perfect woman candidate will be 6 feet tall and a quarter foot wide. And I think that that is a perfect microcosm of the unrealistic expectation we have on female candidates.
Jen Lunsford's a candidate in the 135th Assembly, and we always offer equal time, so you'll hear her opponent on this program as well. That's what we do. Thank you for taking the time to be here.
Thank you very much.
Tiana Magnon, it is always a pleasure. Political analyst, media specialist, I always appreciate the time with you.
Anytime.
Thank you. Professor Laurel Elder from Hartwick College, thanks for making the time for the program today. Appreciate it very much.
It was great being on.
And thanks to listeners. I've got a lot of feedback. Couldn't even get through all of it today, both hours. Let's keep having a wide range of conversations on politics, how our society responds to crisis, who's prepared, who has a plan for that, and more. Our thanks to Emma Ray Stein, the intern, Rob Braden, the engineer, Megan Mack, producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Talk to you tomorrow.